This is Rocket Science.
Hi everyone, this is Sonia, and you're listening to This is Rocket Science. I'm here with my co-hosts.
I'm Tina.
And I'm Justin.
And today, I wanted to talk about sci-fi. So, as we all know, unless you've been living under a rock, the second Dune movie came out last week, and it's doing quite well in theaters. I had the privilege of watching it, even though I've never seen the first one.
That must have been very confusing for you.
It was very confusing. It took me a very long time to figure out who the worms were. It also took me a very long time to realize that that was Paul's mother. And I was very, a lot of questions to be asked. But for people who haven't seen the second movie yet, Justin, I know you haven't.
Nope, I have not.
Do you want to give the audience a recap of Dune 1?
Yeah, so since that's all I know, Dune 1 kind of reminded me of The Fellowship of the Ring in terms of story building and introducing the characters. And so I haven't read the books. That's my disclaimer. And I've only watched the movie, I think, like a few times. So in my mind, it was just this introduction of characters and this world where you meet a few houses. House Atreides, I think, is the one that Timothée Chalamet is.
Paul Atreides.
Yes. He was kind of my favorite character. So Paul Atreides was...
He is the protagonist.
Isn't he the only character in the first movie?
Zendaya. And his whole family. No, there are a lot of characters.
Is Paul Timothy?
Yes.
Oh, no. I liked his dad.
Oh, well...
Who's his dad?
Sad for you, because I'm pretty sure... Wait, are spoilers allowed in this podcast, guys?
Wait, this is a movie that came out 3 years ago.
That's fair. I'm pretty sure...
That's true. If you haven't watched
the
it...
The man died.
I haven't watched it. Oh, yeah. I knew he died.
Okay. So, yeah, House Atreides gets blessed by... Or quote-unquote blessed by the universal...
Cosmic powers.
Yeah. Wait, okay. So, sorry to interject.
No.
Is the house with Florence Pugh the cosmic power thing? Or is there like...
No.
Okay,
so there's
some cosmic power.
Yeah, they have their own type of power.
Okay, I see. Okay. Continue.
Yeah. So they get the rights, I guess, to this new land. I forgot what that planet was called, but it's the sand world, let's say,
with all the spice.
Yeah, with all the spice. Is that Dune?
The world.
I feel like that would make
like
sense.
The Earth.
I think Dune wasn't Dune revealed.
I don't know, dude.
As another word in movie 2.
Oh, I don't know.
So
okay, sorry. Give yourself spoilers.
Okay, so actually, I don't know what that world is called, but. The people that live there are called the Fremen people, and the original rulers of that world was the Harkonnen. And obviously, when you first get introduced to all these houses, the Harkonnen is really upset. I think it's Batista? Yeah, Batista plays a member of House Harkonnen, and he's clearly upset because he just lost this world, his people lost this world to House Atreides. The name is called Arrakis.
Yes,
I just
Googled it.
Right? Okay, yes. Nice. Okay, so the world is called Arrakis, and so House Harkonnen just lost control over Arrakis to House Atreides. But this was all within the plan. And what happens after House Atreides goes to Arrakis is there is this betrayal and death, a lot of death of House Atreides. And the only people left standing is the main protagonist, Paul Atreides, who is played by Timothée Chalamet, and his mother. Mom? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's all I know about, dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very epic. I did not know why this place was so special at all. And so even to like right now, when I just Googled what is Dune about, and then Google told me that the spice extends human life and gives you like metacognition powers or whatever.
It opens your mind.
Okay.
As the movie says.
Ah, okay. Okay. So I think that idea is super interesting, that there's some like intergalactic thing that like aids in human life and gives you a more advanced way of thought. And that kind of reminds me about the movie Arrival, which we talked about during our last sci-fi episode, because that, like, have you seen Arrival?
I have not.
Okay, so the general premise is
I think I read the book.
Okay, slay. So the general premise is that there's like this there's this group of like alien species, and their language gives you like, it makes time, so it makes time a circle as opposed to linear, and so you can kind of see like every part of your life. And so I think that idea is also like opens the human eye to being able to like see beyond general human thought and whatnot. And I think that's a really interesting concept that a lot of sci-fi seems to continually touch on, is the fact that like our lives are just so much worse than other alien species, but also that there are ways that their understanding of the universe can help us. So it makes us more susceptible to benefiting from them. Which I think is interesting.
Would you want those powers?
I didn't know what the spice was until now. I don't think I would. Like, it just, I don't know. Seems like a lot to take on.
So is it only the local Fremen that could Fremen?
Like Fremen.
Fremen.
Like ramen?
Kind of. Fremen. It's a play on free man, I think. Oh. Free men.
This is interesting.
So they can only access that power?
Don't remember that part of the lore, but I think it's because they're desert people. They just have more ready access to spice and have been utilizing spice since forever, whereas these outsiders are suddenly trying to come in and destroy their homeland and take their spice and use it for capitalist dictatorial endeavors.
Interesting.
All too familiar.
I also thought that, like, I guess my question before was like, I had no idea what the like society with Florence Pugh was. Like, it looked like they were puppeteers managing life on like the other houses or whatever. But I don't know if that's actually true.
What do you mean by puppeteers?
Like, they were kind of regulating the rest of the houses.
Oh, right, because Florence Pugh's dad is the emperor.
Of, like, all four houses?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
He's a big emperor.
Wait, do we find that out in Dune 2?
Yeah, so...
Oh.
And then everyone is power hungry in Dune 2, and they want the power. And the Harkonnens want to take over the Emperor's spot. Paul wants to take over the Emperor's spot. And it's pretty much established at the beginning of the movie that the Emperor is losing his power because he orchestrated this whole plan to massacre the Atreides. So people are already very not at peace.
So he orchestrated the like assassination attempt on his daughter?
What? No?
No? Okay.
He does not kill his daughter.
He kills House Atreides.
Oh, I see. Okay. So
where he helps the Harkonnens kill the Atreides.
So Florence Pugh is
the Emperor's daughter. So essentially a princess.
Yeah.
Oh, is that... What was her people called?
I don't remember.
Is that... But Paul is a part of that group as well, right? Because of his mother? No?
No.
Oh.
Wait, Paul is just Atreides primarily.
Oh, yeah, because
I think, like, Paul's a completely... So you said there's four houses. Paul's a completely different house that the Emperor's house basically wiped out.
Florence Pugh is Princess Irulan, the eldest daughter of Emperor Shaddam IV.
Okay, so we don't meet her in Dune 1.
Oh.
No, we don't.
Sorry, that's my bad.
I see. No, I'm like, who?
Who is Florence Pugh?
Did I not pay attention?
No, she did not appear in Dune 1.
Wait, so they literally did not have Zendaya or Timothy, or Florence Pugh?
And Zendaya was in Dune 1.
Well, she was in like the last 5 minutes.
No, she was in a lot of it. Most of Dune 1 is just outtakes of Zendaya walking in the desert. Because what happens is Paul just has visions, and the visions are of Zendaya.
So she's technically in it a lot, but she's doing not.
So really. Much of it is just Paul looking at Zendaya in his mind's eye. That was just like so Dune. Yeah, so I did not particularly like Dune 1. Uh-huh. I felt like very slow world building. I thought Dune 2 was better, but I still think the world building is fundamentally flawed and confusing if you're not a fan of the book. Mm-hmm.
I think that's another thing I wanted to touch on, is that a lot of sci-fi, especially in this series, focuses so much on the world building, which you kind of have to do when you have these complex societies that are like beyond modern day human civilizations. And I guess in the case of Dune 1, it sounds like that came at the risk of actually having a plot and like progressing that plot.
Yeah. So there was no plot development. The only thing that happened in Dune 1 is all the Atreides die.
Oh no.
Right. That's actually really true. There's not much that happens besides a massacre. That's the big thing.
There's some important world building, but it doesn't really come into play until Dune 2.
Do you want to say that again?
There isn't really a lot of important world building. There is a lot of important world building in Dune 1, but you don't see the impact until Dune 2. Mm-hmm. I feel like in a book, it's much easier to just accept world building because it's a book.
And I also think in certain cases, a book or like a comic are so much more compact, or like the beginning and end of the book are closer to each other as opposed to like a movie and then you're releasing this sequel, 3 years later?
Yeah.
And so I think it's like sometimes adaptations, I think as of late, there's been so many adaptations of things like Spider-Verse, where you have part one and it ends on a cliffhanger and then you're waiting for X years for part two.
Yeah.
And I think Dune was like the first franchise to do that.
Yeah. That was definitely a massive cliffhanger, like for Dune 1, I guess. Or I would say, you're not satisfied after Dune 1.
Yeah, I think they intentionally fabricate those cliffhangers, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's a common technique, but great segue into general discussion of adaptations. Mm-hmm. Definitely the downfall of Dune the book into Dune the movie is, I think so much of Dune the book is actually just mental descriptions, just descriptions of what's happening in the character's head, because they're taking the spice and they're having all these visions and internal sessions with whatever cosmic power. So that is very hard to depict in a movie where you can't really see into the character's mind.
And from what I'm hearing, it sounds like in Dune 1, they kind of tried to do that, but they made it really clunky. Because when you were trying to see into Paul's mind, you literally just saw
weird light. Yeah. It's just hard. It's definitely not the same effect. And I think Dune the movie does a good job trying to capture what it can in this format.
I think that was actually also, this isn't something we like discussed, but something I just thought about was, I don't know if you guys have seen like The Hunger Games, the new one?
No.
Okay, the new Hunger Games is like the backstory to President Snow. And the book is like goes hard on every internal monologue that he has, because we know that he's going to eventually turn into this power-hungry dictator. But the entire book is like him doing every action because it will benefit him in the end. Whereas the movie tries to make you more sympathetic towards him and kind of see that progression, which doesn't really work as well, because then it's kind of so sudden that he's like, it's very hard to figure out what his motivation is. And so in movie adaptations, sometimes it's hard to convey character motivations for doing things, or like any internal monologue, without it being clunky.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that is really hard to depict. I read somewhere exactly that the book contains a lot of mental thought. So the first time they made Dune, like back in, I don't know, the 30s or the 40s, it was very strange, and it was really kind of a flop.
Definitely not that long ago, because I think the book was written in the 80s.
Sorry.
But okay. I believe that.
And I think that's also, like, there's such a stark contrast between sci-fi, the book genre, and sci-fi, the film genre. I think purely because of that, you can afford to take so much space to do world building in a book because you have more space to explain the world building right away. As opposed to in a movie, if you take that time, if you take that runtime to establish these things, then you're inevitably going to A, have a longer movie, and B, or B, have like a sequel.
Yeah, which is, I think Lord of the Rings might fall into the same category. Mm-hmm. I've never read the books or seen the movies, mm-hmm. but from what I've heard, the movies get kind of boring because they're probably mm-hmm. trying to set up this world.
The first one is very like that. And that's why I thought it reminded me of, the first Dune movie reminded me of Fellowship of the Ring. Mm-hmm. In that it was focused on just introducing the audience into this Middle Earth, just as Dune 1 does introduce us to that whole world, but now that I think about it, I don't think they do it as in depth as Lord of the Rings. Fellowship of the Ring was pretty in depth.
Well, it could also be, I again have not read or seen Lord of the Rings either, but how many worlds are there that you have to be introduced to? Mm-hmm. Is it just the one?
No, there's a few. Like, you get the elven world, you get mm-hmm. the orcs, you get some of the dwarven okay. world as well, mm-hmm. and the human world too. So
it sounds like it was done
yeah.
better.
It was long. What, Dune 1 was long too, right?
Yeah, 3 hours. It was. Yeah. I think, yeah, another thing that movie adaptations are bound to struggle with is a movie can only be that long. Mm-hmm. Whereas and in the movie, I think what Dune 2 did was there were a lot of plot points that seemed to come out of nowhere, such as Paul Atreides saying, oh, I'm actually also a Harkonnen. And watching the movie, it's like, where did this plot point come from and why does it matter? And we probably won't find out until the next movie. Whereas in a book, I think there was way more build up to that plot point. It felt more like a twist. And second of all, in a book saying, oh, I'm actually a Harkonnen, like a paragraph of words, and we have the understanding, okay, this probably is going to come up again. Whereas mm-hmm. in a movie, it takes up 3 minutes of precious screen time, and it's like, why did I have to watch that piece of information?
Yeah. It's also like the movie has to, in a book, you kind of imagine the feelings that the characters are feeling. If it's written well, you can do a lot of that, like, mental gymnastics, whereas a movie has to present it to you. So if it's a, like you said, that like discovery that he's a Harkonnen has to be so, like, they have to hone in on like making sure the sound's right, making sure the lighting's right, so that people understand the atmosphere that they're supposed to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Was the Bene Gesserit a big group of, or a character? Oh, so they stopped. They didn't appear.
Well, I don't
too.
Like. I might not know what that is.
They were, so the Bene Gesserit. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. Is what Paul's mom was a part of, like that secret.
Oh, I think it's mentioned because Paul's mom has a lot of power. She can use the voice.
That voice thing.
Yeah. So that's established. I think that's like the Florence Pugh family can also do that.
Okay.
That's, so
okay.
They're the nuns.
Yeah. So I thought the in the first movie the mother Bene Gesserit, the one who tests Paul. Do you remember that scene?
Yes, kind of.
So
yes.
I thought her father was the supreme ruler.
Oh.
You know, when you guys were talking about.
I see.
Yeah.
her bloodline is unclear. So she like did not know where she came from, which is why in Dune 2 is a whole revelation that she's also a Harkonnen, which she did not know. So she doesn't know where she's from, is my understanding.
So he's everything.
Yeah, but it definitely has powers.
He's
the Avatar.
When you guys were saying they like wiped out an entire nation and there were four nations to begin with.
Yeah.
That's the Avatar. Yeah.
So true.
Of which there is an... Oh, okay, so I think that actually is a really good segue to not using movies for book or comic adaptations, but rather Netflix, not Netflix particularly, but like
live action series.
And there's also Three Body series, which is coming out soon.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you all think about that? Because a series does give you way more screen time and you could have multiple seasons, which could come out not that far apart from one another.
I think with Avatar and Three Body Problem, they definitely run into different issues and choices. I think a choice that the Avatar live action makes is that it's probably catered to people who watch Avatar growing up. So as of now, they are adults. So they definitely chose to make the whole show way darker and less lighthearted, which I personally appreciated. I've only seen the first episode so far.
I've only seen the first episode.
But it's just way darker than the cartoon, obviously. Mm-hmm. But watching the cartoon and animation, it's just, I never realized the gravity of what was happening in the show. Like, this is actually war. Mm-hmm. This was actually a massacre of a whole nation, which is information I didn't fully process watching it in animation, even though I watched it pretty recently.
I watched Avatar for the first time in college last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I knew that it was quite literally mass genocide of an entire population, but I think watching that in the live action where they took that conscious choice to show certain things, you were like, whoa, this is wild.
Yeah
it does touch upon pretty dark topics, you know. Yeah, genocide. And I don't know how it got approved on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, because they don't show the gore.
Right.
They just nod head to end, and it's all back to laughs and jokes and the kids having fun.
I think it leads into the kids factor a lot. And I haven't watched the entire series yet, but I've read a lot of like, this isn't as good because they don't represent the characters as well. And I think a lot of that comes from how adult they're trying to make the show. Because if you look at like the actors themselves, they like even off screen embody the characters so well, but the writing is just so like, in some cases, I think monotone. And so that forces forces the characters to be very one dimensional, I think.
I think that was a general question that I'm trying to understand, is why was Avatar The Last Airbender so successful as an animation? Mm-hmm. Is it because look at the plots, I don't think it's fundamentally different from a lot of other world-saving shows. It's the same plot. Mm-hmm. It's the hero's journey.
I wonder because it was catered towards children. And like...
Yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed it growing up.
Yeah.
For sure. I remember. Same. Yeah. And that's why I watched the live action to my extreme disappointment. And then I watched the show, which I do like much better than the movie adaption. But I think it gave you a taste of evil, maybe, like just a slither. But there was always, it was always in a lighthearted manner. So, yeah, so maybe it was that yin and yang. You got like a little bit of both. So it was that much more captivating. I'm not sure. Yeah, because I did want to see more fights. I think I don't know if you guys ever saw Legend of Korra.
I did.
He did. So when they start talking about the darkness of the elements, like water can go into blood bending,
yeah,
like things like that, I'm like,
you were
there. This is what I've been waiting for.
I think Legend Core was definitely intended for like older children.
Yeah, protagonists are older as well.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
So maybe it was like a Harry Potter thing where it just follows us as we get older, you know, so we're consistently relating to it. Yeah. But it was definitely one of my favorite shows. I don't know if I could pinpoint an exact reason why, but I definitely agree. It.
I think that's what makes it so hard with like the adaptation is like, regardless of how well it's done, you're still going to have people who have like the childhood, this was a really good show growing up. And it's hard to build on that like, level of perspective.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a group of people that have never seen an animation but watched the live action. Do they like the live action?
She really likes it. She knows like the general premise, but she never watched it. And she was like pretty invested. She will, like, I will say, I've only seen the first episode, or like we watched the first episode together. She got very bored about halfway through. And to be fair, I also got a little, like, it was a long episode. So, I don't know, there's...
Yeah, they're like 50 minutes, right?
They are 50 minutes, yeah.
So that's tough, because I feel like in this type of adaptation, it's so hard to appeal to audience who aren't there for the nostalgia. And if you take away people who love the show and are just supporting the world because they want to see more of the world, then... does the show actually bring more value or something new? It's hard to say.
Interesting. It's just rehashed over. Yeah.
Which, segue, could be the making or the downfall of the three body problem. Because looking at all the material that's already out there, the show, the live action, is going to be fundamentally different from the book because it has a whole different cast of characters. I'm inclined to believe that the general plot will be the same, but all the characters are different. So for some context, the book focuses mostly on this one Chinese scientist who goes through the mystery of the three-body problem. But in the live action, we have a group of international scientists coming together from all over the world trying to solve this mystery that is the three-body problem. So... It's going to be a very different choice of what personalities they give the characters, how the characters develop. And with that freedom, it could be better, could be worse.
I think you do have a very large audience that hasn't consumed that media. Like, I don't know how many people have read through the Three Body Problem in its entirety.
That is fair. Yeah, I think science fiction as a whole is not in a very popular genre. So I feel like I would argue that people currently alive, more people have read Three Body Problem than Dune.
Oh, I was going to like compare it to like Avatar, which has
another Avatar, I don't think that's comparable.
Okay, okay. Yeah, this is probably true.
But Dune, I know a lot of people who read Dune. Or I don't know, I don't, that's a lie.
It's definitely different demographic. I think if you shift towards China, way more people would have read. Right, yeah, yeah, but right, way fewer right. people would have read Dune.
I see. Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to see it. You know, it's coming out on Netflix, right?
It is, March 21st, guys. I'm worried, but excited. I will have a watch party. Yes, for people at Columbia. If you search on Discord for ETO, you can join the Discord. We don't really talk much, but the watch party will happen and we'll be organized over there.
Come on over, everybody.
Any final thoughts or comments?
I'm hopeful of what's to come in this genre.
Sci-fi is the best. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Oh, also, to our faithful listeners, apologies for our terrible financial advice, because right after we talked about how a lunar stock was going up, their satellite,
their rover.
Their rover collapsed onto its side on moon's surface, and their stock promptly plummeted. It's still a generally increase as compared to a month ago, but you know, it's not climbing that steadily. So don't listen to us for financial advice is the takeaway.
If you did, that might be more of a on you.
Yeah. All right, guys, stay tuned. And March 21st, Three Body Problem on Netflix.